I want to welcome you to Growing Spiritually in Our Creativity. I'm Stephen Street. I'm a chaplain at a rest home in Moorhead, Minnesota, Eventide Lutheran Home. Just started there in January, came from the parish after being 11 years in Grand Forks. And my first love is art. And though I'm not going to talk about art today, we're going to talk about creativity and that how all of us are artists. And I'm going to need a couple things. Number one is, would there be a timekeeper? About 5 to 10 minutes before we end, let us stop and I'll open it up for discussions. But let us consider this lecture two. Anytime you want to interrupt, disagree with me, because there's going to be some things I'm going to say that'll challenge you, is you feel free to do that. But I'm so excited about this subject that I'm going to have a tendency not to quit. And I may even keep going on through the supper hour. And I gave this session to the University of North Dakota, and I'm going to try to condense it in a large number of sessions down into two-hour sessions. Today we're going to talk about what creativity is. Tomorrow we're going to talk about what blocks our creativity. And the basic premise that we're going to begin with today, the artist is not a special kind of person, but every person is a special kind of artist. That's significant for us, because a lot of you are going to say, I can't play the piano, I can't draw, I can't act in a play. That has nothing to do with creativity, and we're going to define the difference between that and talent and what that means for us. You are an artist, you do have creativity in you, and you have something significant to say. So let's begin. I'm going to be talking about the various subject lead into this. Again, feel free to interrupt at any time. I've got a good friend that's a doctor in Park Rapids, Minnesota, and one of the things we like to do is cross-country ski together. His name is Dr. Morris Spangler. And Maury is really in good shape, and every time I go down there with him, he's always far ahead of me. And as we're going through the pine trees and up and over the dales and what have you, I can never keep up with him. And at times he is visible, and at times he's invisible. And when he becomes invisible, I got to trust on the fact that I need to follow his tracks and need to follow where he has been. And when I begin to think about creativity, I think about our relationship spiritually to God, is that we never see God fully face to face. If not seeing his back, we see his tracks, where he has been, and where he has been is going to be the key to opening up what our creativity is. Now, the subject that I'm talking about today is growing spiritually in our creativity. Let me define for you what I mean by each of those words so we're specific. When I talk about growing, I'm talking about Genesis 32. And in that story, let me rehearse it with you a little bit. Some of you remember from olden days. Jacob, most of you know him from the Old Testament, had a brother named Esau. Esau was his hairy brother who was quite a hunter. And through a little conniving with dear old mom, they got old Esau to go out and do a little hunting. And while he was out doing that, mom says to Jacob, why don't you go in the tent and get that blessing that's supposed to come to Esau, the oldest, your brother, and put a little sheepskin over your hair and come into dad, who's partway blind, say, hi, dad, I need your blessing. Sure enough, he did that. His father says, come over here, I need to touch you. He touched him and he says, I give you the blessing. Well, all of us know that story. When Esau comes back from hunting, he's really excited about his day's thing until he finds out that Jacob essentially connived, lied, and stole his birthright. So we pick up on the story in Genesis 32. Years later, he has not seen his brother. Jacob has not seen Esau now for a while. And he's camping on the Jabbok River. And that night, before he is to see his brother the next day, whom he has not seen for a while, he has a fantastic encounter with God. And this is the encounter. The angel, in appearance of a man, comes and wrestles Jacob to the ground. And Jacob says, what's your name? And he says, it's not important to know my name. He says, what's your name? And he says, my name's Jacob. No longer will I call you Jacob, but I will call you Israel, which means God in our struggles. So the way that we begin to grow in our creativity, and I'll talk about that as growing, is in our struggles. And that's what I want to talk about, because Israel means that, God in our struggles. And so a lot of people think that creativity only happens when you got all this joy and when you got this mountaintop experience. And when in fact, you get to come to Holden Village and get away from all the struggles. Well, that's wonderful. I'm really enjoying this week. But it was interesting to talk to some of our creative people out of the choir who were saying, I got to go back to work tomorrow. I got to face those same people that I see day after day. And probably were saying to me the most uncreative part of our life, when in fact, that's contrary, when in fact, it is the most creative part. Where our deepest struggle is, whether I'm going through a relationship with my wife or children, my work, what have you, we often think that's the most uncreative. Not true. Where my deepest struggle is where I'm going to find creativity come gushing out of me. But we don't feel creative, and therefore we have a tendency to think, this is not creative. So I go off to Holden Village and become creative. And Holden Village is wonderful. It's the Mount of Transfiguration. Wow, Jesus, we see you transfigured before us. It's a wow experience. But then Jesus says, but we've got to come down from the hill and go back into the city. So we don't want to define growing and creativity as something opposite of struggle. Where your deepest struggle is where your greatest opportunity to grow inside creatively. Okay? And so we're not talking about escapism. We're not talking about getting away from various things. We're going to be talking basically about being spiritual, and that's the second part. What does it mean to be spiritual? What I'm talking about is being inward, learning to take a journey inward and find out what's going on inside of me. Yes, this is community. Yes, this is a time to share, but how am I going to learn what's going on inside of me? We've been doing some things in terms of watercolor painting, and everybody's watching me in terms of demonstrations, but essentially, each and every one of them are going to do their own thing. They're going to do their own thing in the sense of saying, this is how I put on my various sight of how I see life. I had an interesting thing. An artist once said, you could take every one of the men in this room, fix them up in the same tuxedo, and put women in the same colored formal, and they'll all be different. Our greatest fear is that we're all going to be the same, when in fact, each of you are going to wear that tuxedo different, you're going to wear that formal different, and you're going to be creative in how you want to wear it, in terms of the mass, whatever you put together. And so spiritual means to go inside. I'm not talking about religion. Religion is a formula, a way of doing thing. I'm teaching people religion. And you say, well, I'm doing watercolor. No, I'm showing them the technique. I'm showing the style. I'm showing them the rules. But everybody fights against that and says, but I want to be spiritual. I want to be my individual self. And that's what it means to be spiritual, to grow in my struggle, to become inward, not outward in terms of what the rules are going on around me. And that's what we want to learn to grow in and realizing. What are some of the other things that we want to learn? Basically, is creativity then, is, as I define it, a connection. It's a connection between God as I understand Him and myself, and that experience taking me into an outward saying, this is how I see the world. Some people do that through music and drama. Some people do that through art. But I get very tired of the narrow concept that creativity is talent. Now, I'm going to draw some flack from you people, and I hope you disagree with me on this. And I'm going to define for you now what creativity and talent is, in my opinion, and you can disagree with me. Okay? Basically, creativity, as I understand it, is being able to actualize myself. Actually, as I see myself and what I see the world around me, and to let that self true expression come out. It has nothing to do with technique and how I meter all my notes and playing the piano. It has nothing to do with mechanics of what's going on. Creativity is basically also an expression then of my true self. It's telling the world, this is how I see it in terms of my perception. It's another phrase that we heard, one of our new chaplain coming up. I like that word called bumping. What did you hear that mean to you as he defined that? Remember what he said in bumping? Getting your act together. It's all coming together. It's when something of a wow experience happens, and I share that with you. It's actually letting that inner self come out. Now, talent, quite different to me, is being able to, for example, to be, is what I call mechanical. It's being able to have everything precise in terms of, if not perfection, being able to put down on a piece of paper, poetry, what have you. It's a very skilled person. Some of my friends who are wildlife artists in Minnesota have got most beautiful pictures in that they're all detailed, and they would define art as realism, which I don't define art or creativity. They would say if you can get a picture closest to a photograph, that it's truly creativity and what have you. No, that isn't. That's talent. That's the ability to perform and meter out all what's happening. And therefore, a lot of you people are sitting in here today saying, I don't play the piano, therefore I'm not creative. Uh-uh. That's to do with talent. Now, here's where some of you can disagree with me. I know a lot of talented people that are not creative. I know a lot of creative people that are not talented. Example, Picasso was a terrible artist. He had no skills. He had none of the abilities. We all laughed at him. We said his art stinks. But the true expression of himself, what he saw, was truly creative. One of the artists in my parish, Emily Lundy, paints like Grandma Moses. Everybody says, oh, yuck, that's terrible art. But in every one of her paintings, she still tells the story of country living. And they're full of life, and you laugh at them when you see them because they tell a story. But they're not perfect. Now, one of my friends who's an artist painted a picture of a mountain lion, and it's so precise, you can blow on its hair and it'll separate. You know? And it's wow, but there's something missing in it. And it's called in the Old Testament the Ruah. Does anybody know what Ruah means?
Breath.
Huh? Breath. The breath of life. It's the life-giving power force. And God formed Adam and Eve, and he breathed into them Ruah. Her art is so perfect, there is no Ruah in it. I look at it and I say, wow. But there's nothing of her in it. It's so perfect, there's no creativity. And she'd probably be offended if I told her that, because she's got all the awards and what have you. So what I'm defining as creativity is, you don't have to play the piano, you don't have to sing in the church choir, you don't have to do those things, but you have something to say, and how you express that through nonverbal actions, through paint, through clay, through acting out your emotions, that's creativity, and letting the world see actually how you are. Now, one of the greatest things that I find then in being able to be creative is a word that we've used a lot here. It's a spiritual word, to have courage. Let me define what courage is not. There's a lot of confident people in this world. They're very talented, got their act together, they're very smooth and polished, what we call Dale Carnegie courses. I know when to smile right, I know what colors to wear, and I know how to put it together. See? And we've got all our TV ads are this way, aren't they? They're just so neat, and a Little House on the Prairie TV show, it's just so fantastic. We think all the families in this world are that way. And that's what we think creativity is in terms of family lifestyle. And it's all put together. Well, confidence is something that we're teaching people how to have on the outside. But I heard a good definition of confidence in the Grand Forks Herald. It says, confidence is a feeling that I have before I understand the problem. So we have a lot of confident people. We have a lot of skilled, talented people. But I'm saying, where are the creative people? And where are we going to challenge each other in terms of saying, let the creativity in you come out, in terms of letting that happen? And therefore, to me, the courage is being able to let God connect with me, to let that happen, and to let that share as I spread that out in terms of the good news in the world. That means a lot of things. I know we use a lot of words in terms of the spiritual community. Risk, to be able to take a risk. One of my favorite stories is a guy that was sitting in a wheelbarrow and another guy was pushing him across this tightrope for the circus act. And these two guys in the ground were watching him. And one guy says to the other guy, he says, do you think that guy can push him across in the wheelbarrow? He says, yeah, I think he can push him across in a wheelbarrow. He says, are you positively sure? And he says, yeah, I'm positively sure. He says, well, would you bet your life on it? Yeah, he says, I bet my life on it. He says, okay, I'm the owner of the circus. Would you go up and get in the wheelbarrow? And so we can talk the talk, but we can walk the walk. And one of the ways to have a courage is to put myself in the wheelbarrow, to say, blind as I am, I know I'm in God's hands. And today, I don't know how anybody else sees this world, but this is how I see it. And this is my ability to have that risk and that faith to reach out. And so what I'm teaching you about is being able to go to your struggles, to learn what God is saying to you inwardly, and then having the courage to connect and go to someone and say, this is how I see the world. Okay? What are some other things that we want to look at? I'm just sort of breezing through some of the aspects of our spirituality that Paul really in the New Testament all the time, didn't he? Talked about Christ within you. I think we spend a lot of nonsense time talking to people if they're not creative and only talented. So we do it with our religion. Do you have religion? Are you saved? We forget the fact that Christ is already within us, and so is that creativity. And if Christ is within us, we need to be able to express then what's going on inside of us. Not just in terms of talent, precise, skilled ways, but being able to say, this is how I'm going to show the world. Have any of you seen the book over at the bookstore on Betty Edwards, Drawing from the Right and Left Side of Your Brain? Okay. She has revolutionized for us a brand new concept that most of us come from a different orientation. And that orientation is none of us can draw. And one of the first things she does with college students in her first semester class is have them draw a picture upside down. If there's a model in front of the classroom, what she does is has you draw that upside down. And what that begins to do is to turn off for you some parts of your brain that most of you are skilled with in terms of the medical field, is on the left side of your brain, and the right side is the logical side of your brain says, hey, turn that picture right side up. And what you do is to learn to shut the left side of your brain off. And you begin to flow with your logical, what you sense and what you see, and to let that happen. And so what she's teaching us is to not only turn that left and the right side of the brain off, but to be able to go into our inner self and say, this is how I see it. I don't care if it's mechanically right and whether you think it's going to think it's art or not, but what I'm going to do is show for you the precise thing of what's going on inside of me. And so what she's taught us is to learn how to perceive the world in a different way. If I've got a whole sheet of paper here, and let's say this is the sheet of paper, I draw a dot on that. I'm going to ask you, what do you see? What do you see on that sheet of paper?
A lot of space.
A lot of space. Uh-huh. Anybody else see anything else?
Could be a hole.
Could be a hole.
Could be a tunnel.
Could be a tunnel. Well, what happens to a lot of us, we're creatures of detail. The first thing we focus in on and say what we see is a dot. That's how we see life. That's how we see the Bible. We always take one little thing out of context and forget to see that there's a whole picture. That instead of just a dot and a detail, and so we do it with the Bible. We open the Bible and we say one Bible verse and we drill it to death and therefore forget to see the whole picture of Jesus Christ in it. If we're painting a picture, we go around here in a little corner. In the left-hand corner, we paint a right rock, and it's so fantastic, and we draw a little bug on that, and all the people see this beautiful painting and say, wow, isn't that a beautiful bug down there in the left-hand corner? When they forget to see that there's mountains up here, that there's trees up here, what have you, in the whole context of the picture. And so creativity is being able to develop the whole part of you. The whole part of you. And maybe what one of the things I'd like to do is to be able to look at some of the left and the right side of the brain in terms of saying what are those parts that happen to us. Let's see if we can pick up on some of that. If I was to ask you now, going back into this whole picture, and we're looking at this now, what is in terms of left and right side of the brain, if this is the left and the right, what would be some other characteristics that you could tell me of the left side of the brain? What up? Huh?
Analytical.
I'm going to analyze everything.
Speaking.
Speaking? That's right. That's the speaking. That's the speech. I put speech.
Linear.
Line. Put. Any other aspects of the left side of your brain?
Focus?
Yeah, it'd probably be more detail.
Mm-hmm. Concrete.
Huh?
Concrete,
nothing abstract.
Quantitative.
How do you spell that word?
Q-U-A-N-T, period. That's from the left side of the brain.
Yeah, right. Okay. What about right side of the brain? Go over here.
Spatial.
Space. Okay, I'll put the word space.
Relation.
Uh-huh.
Assimilating. There's something, they approach things wide.
Would that be the whole, the wide? Looking at the whole?
Instead of analyzing the focus, you know, the small focus, they go
like
this, very
wide perception instead of, okay, just the narrow. What are the aspects of the right side of the brain?
Intuitive.
More intuitive, uh-huh. Is that intuitive spell right? More word emotion.
Imagination.
Mm-hmm.
So it's creativity on the outside.
Creativity? It could be both. And that's one aspect that we're going to look at, because we have a tendency as Greeks, you know what I mean by Greeks? Greeks put everything into neat little thinking, where the Old Testament Hebrew saw everything whole. I would say definitely this would be more Greek, and this is more Hebrew. The Greek saw everything logical, it's put into orders. Their art, their poetry, everything, their logical thinking was left side brain. Hebrews thought more in terms of emotion. This would be more emotional. This would be more thinking. Often we stereotype, and this is not true, we stereotype this masculine and this feminine. But we're having some questions about that today. And one of the most fantastic things that we've done, and have not explored this field at all, is if I was to say that the left side of my brain was God, and the right side of my brain was Jesus Christ, the feeling, we've left something out. And what is that? The Holy Spirit. And one of the things I really challenge in this kind of thinking is that I have left in the aspect that we not only have left and right brain thinkers, but we have the stem of the brain that comes down. That there's a part of our life that looks at terms of also being very creative. In the aspect, does that mean that God's not creative and Jesus Christ? No. What I'm trying us to think of is not only in stereotypes of Greek left and right, but in terms of what happens in the middle. We tend not only to think of masculine and feminine, but we're starting to begin to think of person. We're not just thinking in terms of talent, we're beginning to think of the creative aspect. Yeah?
Can you explain why you put God on the left and Jesus on the right?
In terms of the Gospel of John, everything's done in terms of logos. Logos is the word, and the word was with God. And John, in terms of being a Greek thinker, always thought of God in terms of the masculine left side of the brain. Now, nothing says that in the book. That doesn't mean God can be very feminine and very emotional. It's just that in terms of his son coming, I put him on that. You can disagree with that. You can switch these two. You can put the Holy Spirit over here. But in terms of the Greek thinkers who wrote in New Testament masculine stuff, I put him on the left. You want to disagree with that? See, really what happens is you can put them all on the left, you can put them all on the right, you can put them all in the middle, and this is the funny thing that happens.
You tend to think of people who, I mean, I think a lot of people are double dominant. I mean, they're mixed dominant, right and left brain, but you see some people who their stronger personality traits are very legalistic, and you think of them as left brain dominant.
Mm-hmm.
Legalistic. Versus those people who are more flexible.
Mm-hmm.
Left and right.
Okay. What's some other aspects? I suppose if we were to take colors, the basic primaries, red, yellow, and blue, I'd put yellow in the middle. Which one would you put red? Ooh, and when did you put blue? Hmm? Three primary colors. Okay. I don't know. People in terms of melody, harmony, and rhythm, where would you put them in music?
Mm-hmm.
Three.
Rhythm in the line.
Huh?
Rhythm in the line. Melody in the middle.
Melody on the right. Harmony in the middle. What's on the left?
Rhythm
on the left. How many agree or disagree with that?
Sounds
melody on the left. See? All different perceptions. Is a glass half full? Is it half empty? Does a rose have thorns? Does a thorn have roses? All our perceptions are different. And what's important is that you tell me how you see it. Because God has given you a message. Each of you has been ordained. And I love that wonderful Psalm 139. Before we were even created, God our creator now, creativity, is God formed in us, and while we're still in our mother's womb, he formed us and knit us together. And that's beautiful, that as we were born, we come into this life being entirely different. We can come out of the same family, and yet we have all different perceptions. And that creativity is being able to honestly look at my struggles inwardly and connecting them with you and God. Okay? I don't know, what would be some other ones? Let me throw out three. Political. Authoritarian, laissez-faire, and democratic. Where would you put them?
Laissez-faire.
Laissez-faire means no leadership, just whatever happens in the group.
Holy Spirit, laissez-faire.
No?
Right.
Laissez-faire, right? Where's authoritarian?
Left.
Yep. Where is the democratic? In the middle? Okay. Obviously, I put in the Greek, the Hebrew, the Christian. I would say Greek left, Hebrew right, the Christian in between. Greek being more logical. You know, just the Greek language is more logical. You read it from right to left, it's like English. A lot of people say it looks like Greek to me. Greek is very understandable. It looks very much like the English language.
It's Hebrew. If any of you ever had Hebrew, is everything's the opposite. Genesis is in the back of the book, and you read it from right to left. Two different orientations, entirely different, just in their language. Those aspects. What else would there be? I had a whole bunch of them written down. Colors, had music. Where's the adult child parent? Did any of you learn TA language years ago? Mm-hmm. Where's the adult parent child? Okay. Mm-hmm. Just having some fun. Okay. Now the whole point of this understanding, as I understand creativity, and as you defined that before, Robert, is that it's the whole picture. It's the pulling together of all this. And one of the most difficult things to do is our orientation says, hey, I'm going to make it black or white. I'm going to go to the left or the right or in the middle. And it's very difficult. It's more confusing, and it's more of a struggle to be able to enter into life and say, how does this all come together? And some days it doesn't come together. Now what I'm talking about in creativity, and it may happen sometimes or not, artists call it crystallization. It's bumping. It's when everything comes together. Psychologists and Abraham Maslow calls it self-actualization. And we look at that. Have any of you studied his hierarchies of needs? Have you ever seen that? Basically, he talked about the hierarchy needs in terms of a triangle. And the basic one down here is daily living. I'm going to put it like we talk about daily bread. It's the basic needs, eating, sleeping. If I didn't get much sleep last night, which I didn't, I'm falling asleep through the day. If I haven't fed myself well, those basic needs. And you can't go up the ladder until that one is taken care of. The next one is belonging, knowing that I belong to the family of God. The next one is, what are some of the other ones? Do you remember them? The self-actualization, being able to identify who I am different than my family members, for example. But the top one is the self-actualization, where everything comes together. When all these needs are taken care of, self-actualization happens. And that creativity. What we talk about in theologians is the epiphany moment. Epiphany. Epiphany means light. And so therefore, when the melody, harmony, and rhythm comes together, and Abraham Maslow says, when I put all three fingers on the piano and they all come together, that richness is what happens when we talk about creativity. But creativity doesn't happen on the mountaintop experience. And therefore, when we're down in here, we say with our daily needs and struggles, how is anything creative going to happen to me? Because that's what we just define. We think it only of as talent. We don't think of it as the whole process, left and right and middle part of the brain. You are an artist. You are creative. And you have something going on with you that's not going on with me. And how you tell and how you express that is up to you. But what we're talking about then, creativity, is being able to have that oneness. Father, as you and I are one, I pray that they may be one. That's when all that happens. That's when we begin to let go and worry, not worry so much about the mechanics, and begin to let that which is in our soul come out and let it come gushing, that things creatively begin to happen. One of the interesting things is that we're doing studies now in terms of the whole body coming together. They just came out with a new report on books in the Artist magazine that I've got. The affect of the eye, when you behold something that's creative and beautiful, what happens to the eye and the pupil? It opens up. It lets more in. And what we're finding out in terms of the creative experience is that when you begin to behold something that's beautiful to you, when you hear even a poem, when you see a beautiful pine tree
when you begin to see something beautiful that happened to you, your eye opens up, your whole soul begins to lighten, and what happens is that you not only contain that, but you want to carry that out and say that expression to the world, what it meant to you. Now, the biggest problem with people today in creativity, and I have with you, is that none of you are going to take this art course, and I don't want you to, is to say that that's the only definition of creativity. Creativity is when you get in touch with your struggle, with your inward self, and begin to connect with God, you, and others. And this is the saddest thing. Down in the harbor of broken dreams, on the shores of yesterday, her half-hull buried sands of time, a schooner lies rotting away. Her broken beams are broken hopes and plans that somehow failed. And the tide drifts in and the tide drifts out, past a boat that never sailed. Her timbers were made of finest wood of forests of the Caribbean, her sails with the wings of albatross that glide over the southern sea. Her decks how echoed with a builder's song, and her fashion planked and nail. Now the seagull's lonesome cry haunts the boat that set never sail. She never answered the siren of call coaxing wind and tide. She never breasted the Spanish main with the seas coming over her side. And at the pennant that hangs from the broken mast, never shook in the lashing gale, for the tides of destiny wax too full, and the schooner that set never sail. Somehow there are men with snow-white hair who sit at twilight years, and often their thoughts drift wistfully back, and often their eyes fill with tears, as they think of the dreams that went astray and the plans that somehow failed. God heal the hurts of men and women who have built the boats that have never sailed. We've all got a boat inside of us, and it's dying to be set to sea. And we want to keep it in the harbor, but one of my favorite posters, as I saw on a pastor's wall, said, the boat was made for the sea, not the harbor. We're scared, we're afraid, and we're going to be talking in our next session about the things that block our creativity, that true expression of what's going on in terms of our soul, and the boats that never sailed, and the butterfly that's flying around here. Now, let's have some feedback on some of the things I was talking about in terms of creativity. What do you think creativity is? What I'm so fascinated is when I've taught these courses, a number of people that come out, we want to know what that means, not only in definition, but what it means in experience. What is creativity to you, if I was to ask you to put it in a word? What is creativity?
One word.
One word, or a sentence, a paragraph.
Awareness of options.
Awareness of options. Awareness of options, so the whole picture.
Response.
A response. Yeah. Right on. Uh-huh. Yeah, today we did something creative in our communication class. We paired off and we blindfolded, and some of you have been on that trust walk. And I've done that a number of times with youth groups and church groups and stuff like that. But it was good to experience today again as being the leader and the follower. And all of a sudden, all of my senses, my response to the world was different because I heard the crick different. I felt the sun different. I could feel objects around me that I'd never sensed before. And so my response was quite different than my orientation to the left side of my brain. When I shut that left side of my brain down and had the sense what was going on, I had a different response to the world. And that's what I think good art, music, and drama does. It shuts down everything and makes us look at it in a new way to respond. It either makes us happy or sad. My favorite word, emotion, comes from the Latin word to emote. And to emote means to move out. God gave me emotion. It's neither hot nor cold. It's neither left nor right. It's neutral.
I can either move out towards you or move away from against you. I can move towards God or away from Him.
God gave us emotion to have response, to move out. Now that I've seen a beautiful blue sky and a nice colored mountain, somehow I'm going to respond to the world hopefully different. I have an emotion about that. And the left side of our brain says, uh-oh, don't get too emotional now. We may get like those Baptists. Don't get too emotional now because, you know, we're not too masculine in our thinking then. But to have a response is to have a response. What's some other ones? What's another definitions of creativity?
Effective surprise.
Effective surprise. I like that. Mm-hmm. A surprise. I believe God is an author and creator of surprises. You never know what He's going to do next. He said, my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither your ways nor my ways. And so that's the wonderful thing I like about Holden. You never know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now. I had a young man in a parish, married, changed jobs a number of times, came in and wanted to commit suicide. And he meant it. And I talked to him about the God of surprises. And I said, you know, it'd be a terrible shame to take your life right now because 5 minutes from now you're not going to know what God's going to do. And in his depression, he looked up at me and smiled and he says, yeah, you know, just before I came into my office, my little three-year-old jumped up in my lap and hugged me and said, Dad, I love you. And those kinds of things that you can't program in, you never know what God's going to do the next 5 minutes. And he says, you know, I think I'd sort of like to hang around and find out what's going to happen. And that's what life is. It's the element of surprise. Little did I know what was going to happen and eating supper with some people tonight over the supper table. What's going to happen? Some new surprise. My wife said to me, let's go see Ghost. You like movies? I said, nah, it's not blood and guts. I like to see Charlie Bronson and Clint Eastwood kinds of movies. And so I went out and I came terribly surprised. If you get an opportunity to see that film, see it. It's a very spiritual film. Ghost. Go see it. Element of surprise. Yeah. Yeah, Patrick Swayze, yeah. Debbie Moore, is it? Demi Moore. And, oh, Whoopi Goldberg. She's funny. What's some other definitions?
Coming from oneself.
Coming from oneself. Mm-hmm. And the struggle that I find every day is, who is myself today? We've just gone through a number of stages, and I'm a nut for learning various things. Have any of you studied Fowler's stages? Fowler is a guy.
Faith development.
One of our fine Methodist guys out is doing workshops across the United States on it. And he's taken Erickson and taking the various stages of life. And he's talking about how we develop in terms of ourself. The first stage is where I grow up and I see my parents saying, wow, what they say and do, you know, they're sort of, if not God, next to God. They say it, they mean it. They're the authority in my life. The second stage is being able to look at who my teachers are. I move out from my home. I go and see this teacher, this adult standing in front of my classroom, and I say, wow, they're saying important things, and therefore I'm going to sort of model my life after them. The third stage is my peer group. And I used to think peers were just basically the people who were teenagers talking about, I wear Guess jeans and I drink Coors beer and do all the various things that are in, see? But he said the bulk of our people in our congregation stay here. They're the people who do what is orthodox. And that's good. What the annual congregational meeting says, we've all vote yes. And we say, that's great. They're the faithful people who show up Sunday after Sunday. Is there anything wrong with that? No. But he says there's another one stage where I begin to say, hey, mom and dad, and hey, teacher, and hey, peer group, you're great, but who am I? I've never defined the authenticity of who I am apart from you. You know, I thought because if you wear blue jeans and you wear yellow shirts and that. That's the way you're supposed to do. And I mold my life around these first three stages. The fifth stage is where I begin to understand, let's say if I live in Seattle, I begin to notice my immediate community. I'm not only Steve Street, but I belong and live within a context of the Salvation Army, of the YMCA, and the people that I can visually see here and now. But he said the spiritual giants are in group six who begin to understand that they live in a global family, that my friend who I cannot see in Nebraska or South America, I'm connected to him or her, and that my total self in terms of these stages is where I begin to grow. And that's where I think I sort of see myself in stage four right now. You know, there's a lot of things that I'm challenging in the church and saying, hey, what fit yesterday doesn't fit today. Some of the Sunday school lessons were great, but I've got to find out what they mean in terms of the context of myself. Creativity, then, as he would define it, is being able to make that movement. And he says, whether you like it or not, if not a crisis or some other person is going to move you into one of these stages, and it's going to be very uncomfortable, and it's going to be a struggle. And he said, in every one of these stages, there's always a dropping off. People come and ask him the same question, why am I losing my faith? They're not losing their faith. It's just what fit for yesterday does not fit today. And I have to learn myself in a new context. You know, I come from the Midwest, and it's really still a neat experience to be out here out west. I know I've been in Arizona, been in a lot of the countries, been in Israel and Germany. But again, to come into contact with different thinkings, different thoughts, to talk to, Pat, one of our gals who's leading one of the communities. She's Jewish background. She's making me sensitive again to the Hebrew community. To be aware of, once again, and I know that, we just don't have many blacks in our Midwest churches, to be able to hear that music, to be able to participate in that. That's the creativity, that's the soul, and learning that my new self is going on to different stages. So we're not losing our faith, we're just growing in it in a deeper sense. What fit yesterday does not fit today. And so we've got to learn and relearn what we're going through. Connie.
Typically, when you move through those stages, do you change your environment? Or in your most creative points, are you able to do that then too? Or do people stay where they are and move through the stages?
Some people will choose to stay where they are because of the fear, and we're going to get in our next session about what blocks our creativity, and fear obviously is one of those, but being able to be specifically about those fears and what they are, is that they will not take the risk, they will not venture out and choose to stay there. He tells the story of the man who was 65 years old and still here in stage one. One of the guys in the council meeting got mad at the 65-year-old and says, how many times have you quoted your mom and dad? Every time you come here, you talked about your dad and your mom. Isn't there anything to yourself? And he got so shook, he went in the pastor next day and he says, is it true, pastor? Am I still in that stage? And he said, well, I can't tell you and make a judgment, but maybe we could grow through some of those stages. And he said, wow, I haven't grown. I don't even know who I am. And some people will choose to stay there. I met with a family that had a death the other time. The daughter had just had not traveled much, had not done much, had stayed in the context of family, very loving family. And in the fright of all this coming unglued, said, why am I losing my faith? Who am I? Who is God? And now it's beginning to creatively move in some other stages, but it's very painful. Does creativity have to be painful? No. But we come back to what I talked about, Genesis 32, is the struggle. Do I want to enter the struggle today? That's the question. That will be my answer to creativity, in my opinion. So, did I answer your question? I don't know if I did. Do we move? Your question was, do we stay in the same place or do we move?
Well, typically people who move through those stages and often change their life situations are labeled as either irresponsible or
right.
or unsettled, whereas it can be, and from a creative aspect, it can be seen as becoming more creative and more original.
Right.
Lifestyle.
Right. And that's one of the things, one of my artist friends is helping me to let go. We've been learning that in the communication. I'm 45 years old and I'm still learning how to let go. You know, I've done all the things that are proper. I still do them as a pastor. I stay within the lines of confinement of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America and what all their policies are and all what my parents taught. And I feel a little uneasy when I go over here because I feel like I'm breaking the rules. Well, when does the soul grow? We take a little risk. You know, there's a little defiance and adolescence in us. And we say, you know, I had one, Edward here today, I don't know. Edward, man, he just broke all the rules today. And after a while says, man, that's great. He was throwing paint and throwing it on the stuff. And he was not doing what we were doing, you know. He was not staying in the confines. I just heard a cute story a pastor told the other day. A pastor asked in a children's sermon, what is perfection? A little kid says, that's when you color within the lines. See? And some days we get up and say, I'm not coloring within the lines anymore. They don't fit. I'm gonna, you know, one adult asked a little kid, what are you painting a tree purple for? It's not purple. And he says, well, it is now. I mean, trees are purple. Who says oranges have to be oranges? Orange colored, you know? Yeah.
I was just going to say in reaction that also chaotic lifestyle might be a reaction to what's going on. If you go along with your parents, that's one way of staying in stage one. But if your whole life is a reaction to your parents, you're still in stage one. Although you have a chaotic Good. Lifestyle, it's almost like you're doing all of these things. I think it's a question of not doing so that it either looks or doesn't look like something. It's just yourself.
Excellent. Good interpretation. I liked you.
I'd heard a discussion a little bit similar to this with the same six stages, and the person at that time said, looked at it from a motivational situation. In other words, stage one, what motivates me is law, the parent voice. Mm-hmm. And the stage two, the teacher, what motivates me there is reward. You know, I get the A's, I get the B's, I get things, I get some gratitude for having done. And the peer stage is the belonging. But it's still all those are, it's when you go into the stage four, when you self-actualize and you have some internalization. And then some extending into caring for what's good for the community. And the final thing is extending to being, breaking all rules and extending to a more spiritual kind of thing. Motivation, I think, fits in that too, to understand lifestyles and how this works.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And he also, I found this so fascinating. I went home and memorized everything this guy said. He said this person had studied his whole life, all different behavior patterns, and really said, this is the one I've studied everything. I've worked in prisons. I've worked in educational back everywhere. And when I study this and I start to understand people from this, he said, I find that people tend to be set in one, but they react and are motivated in the ones opposite. I mean, you know, surrounding. You're not really solely in one area. And you have to move from one to the next before you get to six.
Hmm.
That's it.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
I'm trying to remember her name. I think it's in Women's Reality. Shave. Sharp. She wrote her definition of the way women actualize themselves is very much like that same thing, the six peaks.
Six peaks. Hmm. That's interesting.
Why is it only women?
I don't know. That was the first place I've ever heard of it. But that's just the book.
Do you think women are more creative than men? I sat in a group the other day, and I don't know how many women, there were 32 women and a couple guys, and they said, men never deal with feelings. All they deal with is left side of the brain. I think that's true.
I think that's always true.
Mm-hmm. It's often true, but not always.
There are a lot more women to be upset with feelings than
Oh, yeah? We have more. I never looked around. We got how many guys? I'm surprised. Yeah, we got a pretty good show, right, guys? Huh? We're creative, right? Pretty close. Yeah. What other kinds of... What do you agree with the definition of creativity and talent? A lot of people usually say I disagree with that because...
Didn't you say that everyone is creative but not everyone has talent?
Right. Picasso was very untalented. He did not have the skills of a good art education in the sense of staying within the lines and saying, you know, some of the principles that I taught in art class, that you never put the horizon line in the middle. He says, I can put it there.
That's artistic talent, but don't you think everybody has some talent? I mean, if you're really putting people down, you say they have no talent.
Right. I hope I don't put down the word. It sounds like I was negating the word talent.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to do that because, one of the organists at our church said, Pastor, I know I've got the education, but I can't go outside the lines. She's a very talented lady, but she was scared to death if she defined creativity as doing what she wanted. She was scared to death. And I mean that. She shook physically, but as long as you told her what the program was and where it was, she's fine.
On the other hand, some people will say, well, I wish I could play the organ, or I wish I could sing in the choir. I don't have any talent, so we put talent in a musical or artistic basis always.
Right, and that's what I'm after. Right. You caught the gist of that. Yes?
Under your definitions, wouldn't everybody have the same inherent ability to be creative?
Correct.
But different people would have different inherent abilities as far as talents go.
Correct. Skills. Mm-hmm.
Craft.
Actually, some people, I think, make up in creativity what they lack in talent. Like my mother, for example, is a very creative cook,
artist.
But she's terrible. She can't read a cookbook. You know, she had no skills in the kitchen, so she compensated through creativity.
Yes.
And, uh-huh. And I think we do that in lots of other areas too.
We do. And Emily Lundy, who paints pictures in my previous parish, not very skilled, but very creative. You know, none of the art education, but right there.
We want to participate, and this channel's closed. This channel's got to open for us, and the creative side's got to open up. The talent side should.
Well, now this is the debate we get into. Do you start with sermons that are concrete and go to abstract? Do we teach in school the concrete laws of art and philosophy? Do we teach the concrete in music? We're saying the rock and roll artists that come out today play three chords. I think you've got to start with some kind of basis. I think you've got to start with some kind of structure. Then you can bust out of that structure and defy those laws. My opinion, I think you've got to start with some kind of thing. Rollo May, the great one who wrote his latest book on The Courage to Create, talks about our limitations, that we're all going to face them. But those structures, those limitations, are what are the basis, the stepping stone to getting somewhere. So I think we have to have some of that. And then that creativity begins to flow in and around that expression of the true self comes out. So I'm not just doing as my teacher showed me how to paint this post.
Why would you presume that everybody has the same amount of creativity?
Inherently.
Because number one, because of our context of who we are as a children of God being born by a creator. A creator, to live in my creator means to live in his image. There's a lot of power, and I didn't get into this, and if I had more time to talk about the word imagination. To live in the image, as we learn in the Hebrew word, means to live in his likeness. Now, as I was created in the image of God, I was created in ability to create. I cannot create a mountain, but I can on a canvas. So I am a co-creator. I am not God, but I am like God, in that I can express taste, touch, feel, smell, hearing in a canvas or in a song. And so to simply be born as a child of God means that I was born by a creator, that I was put together in Psalm 139 in my mother's womb, knit together I don't know if any of you ever seen an autopsy, but one of my experiences to see the human body as it was taken apart, never could be put back together. In total awe, I stood back and said, there's got to be an artist that put this together. How the intestine and the heart and the liver all put back together. I don't, honest to goodness, I don't know how all that stuff is inside of our abdomen. Because when you take it out, a human being cannot put it back in the same way with all the skills and talents and abilities.
And sometimes when you...
Yeah. And so I guess what I'm saying is, by the very nature of being created by someone, and some people who don't even call God God, some people belong to Alcoholics Anonymous or who are of a different religion or something, who don't use the word God, a higher power, there was something... outside of me that put me together and was a creator, artist, musician, poet that put my arms and my legs together. Often wondered why my nose isn't on the backside of my head. Why is it there? The fascination of that, being created in the image of God, means I'm already creative.